meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from a little cave on a tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened and a vision was revealed. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing in the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us, to some degree, it has always been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let us now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, and author of A Mother's Plea for the Winds Have Changed. Together, we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Happy Monday. Good Monday. I'm Father Anthony. I'm your brother. And I do share with you the distress, the kingdom, and the endurance we have in Christ Jesus on another. This is a beautiful day here in Chicago,
nice.
Again, isn't it?
It's nice.
So anyway, hi, Tony. How are you?
Fine.
Yeah. Christina's on her way. I think she
has to
lock some doors. You got to keep the doors locked. Nick, how are you doing this morning?
Good. I made it on time, and things ran a little bit differently than I expected, because when I was on the Eisenhower coming down here, it wasn't as backed up as usual. When you get closer to the construction, for some reason, I started to think maybe people are either avoiding it or, I don't know, just one of those good days, I guess.
I don't know. What is it? Lollapalooza?
This weekend?
This week. I think. It's already now.
Well, yeah, it's the weekend, but they have, like, different things going on.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I just heard something on the radio about specifically about the Eisenhower, and that this is going to cause some problems for those coming to the... What is it? The Lollapalooza?
It's a festival.
What is it? Lollapalooza?
It's a musical festival.
Music fest, yeah.
Anyway, good. People need to celebrate.
But I'm doing good today.
Good. I'm glad you're doing good today.
That's all that's important.
That's really all that's important, you know?
My parents, they came back from Florida. I picked them up on Saturday, too. Oh, and nice. So they had a good trip, and they're happy to be back, but not happy to be back, meaning that, you know, all the work comes back, you know, when you get back from vacation.
Exactly.
Back to life. Back to reality.
Yeah, but the cats are happy they're home, too, and I took care of stuff, and so they're happy to be back, too.
Good, good. Life is work.
And they had a great time.
Good. I'm happy about that. Happy for you. Happy for your parents. Happy for you, Christina. You guys sang very nicely at the quinceañera.
Thank you, Father.
We had a busy weekend, a big weekend, and Christina and her father sang at the quinceañera, and we did a very, very nice job.
Thank you, Father.
We had a big wedding.
Yes.
And they had a beautiful choral group from Willow Creek. I think it's Willow Creek High School. It's the Opus Dei High School.
Very traditional.
Is it called Willow Creek? I don't know. It seems to me it was called Willow Creek, but was it beautiful? I mean, yours was beautiful as well.
Sure.
You guys sang in Spanish, and they sing in Latin. Everything was in Latin.
Wow. It was beautiful.
Felt like I was in the Vatican. So it inspired me to sing the Mass as well. And you know, and then, of course, where do you think the couple went afterwards?
Where they went? The reception?
No, after the reception.
I don't know. I have no idea.
Roma.
Oh, for their honeymoon.
For their honeymoon.
They didn't have a reception?
They did, yes.
Oh,
but
okay.
I mean, after.
Afterwards.
After the wedding. Well, you know, in Chicago, the wedding's not just a Mass, but it's a whole, right?
The whole.
Like, you're going to the wedding.
A lot of times
people don't go to the Mass, but they go to the.
It's the marathon.
The reception.
Right.
So you get the Mass, the reception, and all that. But very nice. The groom was from Trinidad, so his family was there. It was very, very nice. And she comes from Patricia comes from a huge family. I think
it's
there's
Irish,
10 children.
A big Irish.
Her father is from Ireland, actually from Ireland.
Yes.
Forget what county, but he's from Ireland. That's a brogue. And actually, we had met many years ago with the Missionaries of Charity when I was having Mass with the Missionaries of Charity, Mother Teresa's sister. So it was very, very nice. It was a busy, busy weekend, but it was a wonderful weekend. Mm-hmm. But it's good to be here on Monday. I was telling you, I tell you this every day. she has to hear this every day. I don't know how much. I think I said it to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, by the way, Tony, you know, it's Monday. We're going to be a little bit light today. Last week was a little bit heavy, it seems to me. And we may get into some heavy stuff, too. You know, just how can you avoid it? Although I do have some questions for myself. As I was just reading from the commentary of the Holy Father yesterday, I thought, well, okay, here we got to ask you guys again, about me, you know, not that it's about me, but just trying to, you know, you want to do a halfway decent job. You want to, you certainly want to reflect the Lord well. I certainly know I get in the way. But before we do that, so Tony, you know, there's a reason why I'm going to bring this up today. So,
okay.
So anyway, you know, for people who have been listening for the last 4 years, you know, we're almost here 4 years, you know, that Tony has this issue with his family.
It's all
right?
In the setup.
I have nothing to do with it.
So I found out, you know, that, you know, you always make yourself out to be the
saint.
The saint, you know, and that everybody else is the culprit and all that. And you're the one that's being bullied and abused and all that kind of
poor
stuff.
Tony.
So
here it comes.
So somebody told me that going back many, many years when you were just a young lad, that you bought a new shirt. You bought a new shirt and your brother happened to be wearing the shirt. And they described how you were coming home from school and you saw him in the street wearing the shirt, and you went livid. You went off on him.
You attacked your brother.
You attacked your brother.
Like
and
always.
They said everybody got caught up in this this battle between these two brothers, the Cain and the Abel. I think you must have been a bit of the Cain.
Yes.
And so anyway, first of all, I had to say thank you for telling me that because it helps me put things in perspective. And
it's
going to
be a good Monday.
Not to give you the always the benefit of the doubt. So
I should say this much. Father did tell me this Sunday, you know, while I was reading.
No, not while you were reading.
Well, not while I was reading.
You were thinking about it when you were reading.
I was thinking about it.
In a second.
I thought so. We all thought so.
I was thinking about it.
The way you were reading. Not kidding.
But yeah, it did.
That
is
a
say you
side.
Did it.
Yeah, I did. That would be a side note, and I will tell you that story later on. But I did. In my thoughts for the Mass, I was thinking of how wretched.
How wretched what?
I really am.
Yes.
But going back to
your
story.
We've been trying to tell you that for about 4 years already.
Right. Everybody, I wouldn't mess with Tony. Just don't mess with him.
Right. Not that I'm going to skirt the issue of what you just brought up, but this is one of the reasons why I am in church every Sunday and every chance I can get, and my brother is not. But that's a side note. I can't remember if this did or did not happen, I would not say that it didn't
happen.
I'm not going to say it because I'm saying, it did happen.
Right.
I don't know. But I trust the person who told me. But now what's interesting, this is why
I think the story isn't altogether
true. This is why I bring it up because then he started asking me, you know, who told you? Who told you?
Thought it was me, right?
No, because you weren't around at that time. You know,
be a few people that would have seen
that.
Uh-huh.
Mostly my neighbors.
I wasn't born
yet,
right?
But you know, what was interesting, Tony? Here you're asking me this before we go into the mat in the sacristy.
Right.
We should have been seriously preparing for the Mass, but we're serious as soon as we pass through the doors. As soon as the bell rings, we go. Although you were obviously still thinking about these things, and I always have to be honest because you were asking me, Ken, who said it?
Who
told you that? And. The person who told me was right in front of you, looking right into your eyes as you were reading.
Oh, Jesus?
No. I mean somebody in the pews.
Oh, my.
So you have to think about who was sitting there.
Yeah. Thanks. That gives me a...
So there you go. So that's the only clue I'm going to give you. You don't have to...
But I did, you know, and I did.
Did you hear what I'm saying?
Yes.
The person who told me
know.
Was actually right there in the church.
Yeah. I don't really care.
With her fiancé.
Oh, yeah. I figured
as much.
So, but you didn't.
That's
you didn't
interesting. But how? Again.
Well, even if she didn't see it, I guess the word flies. You know, because
anyone that knows my brother and I have seen things like that before. That's why, again, I think at this time I've calmed down somewhat, but my brother still hasn't.
Oh yeah, here we go.
So you've mellowed out a little.
Just a little.
Okay.
Not much.
Anyway,
I did. Knock him out of bus one time. He brings that up a lot.
Anyway, so I just wanted to bring that up because I've had great sympathy for you for so long, but that's changed as of conversation.
Thank you for your support. Right?
Thank you for your support.
Anyway, so
I think I'll find an extra day to get in the church because I need
more.
See,
I'm glad I have two brothers and not a sister.
I think we would have killed a sister.
I've often wanted such
a thing on a radio.
Well, not so much killed, but we would have really, really...
Ripped her.
Well, God spare your poor mother, though.
Yeah.
Your poor mother.
She's the one that needs the most help. Yeah. That was a Freudian slip. I'm sorry.
We'll change the subject here. So.
Right.
But again, before we go into anything heavy, it's going to be heavy.
Thank you for the hot spot.
I beg, Father. You know, that everybody gets just permit us to have try to have a light show today, because it has been. Things are heavy, you know, but we'll get into that. It's just life. It is. It's the way it is. But anyway, so thank God for the weekend. It was a beautiful wedding. And just to put the whole wedding in the context of the bigger mm-hmm. picture, the historical picture, the cosmic picture, you know, God wedded to his people. They chose some beautiful readings for that wedding. They chose a wedding feast in Cana of Galilee. And she's a teacher, by the way. She teaches at the Opus Dei. At the school, that's how she brought the choir. I'd love to get this choir here for a concert or even for a couple of masses or something. It was, mm-hmm. I'll tell you, it was like we were transported into a different sphere, you know. When we speak of the liturgy as really that we're taken up into heaven, mm-hmm. or that heaven condescends and embraces us as we celebrate, that's why we have to, as a priest celebrates the Mass, as the people participate, we have to be very careful not to manipulate the prayer. But we have to, our job really is to, certainly as priests, is to lift the veil. Mm-hmm. So this is really about the very drama that's mm-hmm. unfolding, a living drama. You know, God, again, God wedded to his people, and we coming together as a mystical body of Christ, the family of God. So anyway, it was
very uplifting, Father. No,
it was.
Your soul, very sacred and solemn.
You know what was nice about it too is just that the people there were equally as focused. Mm-hmm. You know, because
everybody's on the same page,
exactly.
Focused on what it is. So it
makes a big difference. Yeah. It gives you cause for hope. You know that all is not
lost. And
that
makes a huge difference.
Well, it makes a difference.
When everyone is on the same page, everyone's focused on the mystery of what's unfolding.
Exactly. So that it's not about any kind of entertainment mm-hmm. or, you know, what can I get from this, but what is it that we're giving? And what mm-hmm. is it that we're giving? But we're really offering our lives. And in this mm-hmm. sense, the couple was offering their lives. Yes. That it's really, and you know, especially today, you hear so much about, well, you know, it's all about love, and, you know, we can't deprive anybody from loving anybody. Well, you know, we're supposed to love everybody, for one thing, right? It's just no-brainer, right? But it's about, really, it's about our being immersed in the love of God and living in gratitude to do the will of God. And that's exactly what they brought to, that was a deep sense that they have of their marriage, so much so that they asked me to present them with and bless the crucifix as a sign of their sacrificial love in imitation of Christ. And I, if you've ever been to one of my weddings, I make a point to emphasize, you know, that our language, you know, that this is not it's not a soap opera. This isn't what's happening here is not a soap opera. This is, you know, certainly our language is a different language. The language of the world, let's just say the language of the soap opera, it's a 50-50 proposition. And by the way, Tony, you're celebrating your anniversary mm-hmm. this week, come to
31st,
think of it.
31st, yes.
That's 30.
On the 31st.
No, on the 31st. I was going to say it can't be 30.
How many years?
Priest 30 years.
I think 14 years?
Probably something like that. I was thinking 12, but
she didn't throw me out yet.
No. No, you've
come close to it.
You have a good woman.
God bless
you. We were talking
with
her yesterday.
She's a saint.
We went out yesterday and with her, and I said, you know,
I
tell
evil,
Tony, you
got
to take
man.
Care of your wife. She's a very good woman. She's a very good woman. So.
And you're good, too. You know, you've got your faults, but you're
caught
okay.
My brother took you know? Off his shirt. It was my shirt. I'm a terrible man.
Anyway, back to the mystique of the mystery of the marriage. Mm-hmm. So, yes, it's not a soap opera. It's not the language of the world. It's the language of the cross, right? In Christian marriage, it's a language of the cross, not a 50-50 proposition, but it's 100% that we give one to another in marriage and imitating Jesus, who gave himself to the last drop of blood, you know. And they were able to grasp that, you know. They came to me with that. And then there was a few things. It was very interesting as we were in the process of preparing. Well, but in the homily, I mean, during the mass.
Oh, in the mass.
It was very interesting, the response, their response. Like I would say something, And by the way, you know, I did not have her sister's wedding. Neither one of the sisters' weddings. Father Garcia had one wedding, and Father Jim Hyde had the other.
Wow. Oh, he did?
Yeah, yeah. So, because I'm saying this because this is the third of 10 children that have been married, and the other two are married here. They don't actually belong to this parish.
No.
But the one was married the year that I was in sabbatical,
mm-hmm.
and the other one must have been married when I was in Rome, perhaps for Radio Maria or something, but it was Father Jim Hyde had the wedding, yeah.
Oh, wow.
So this was the first, this is the first I've had a Mass with the family, the present there. I met the family before, mm-hmm. but anyway, I bring that up because we were discussing that.
Okay.
Christine and I were discussing that. A lot of things that I brought up in the homily, you know, they looked at each other as if, well, weren't we just talking about that? or, you know, this is exactly, so it was just beautiful. It was very beautiful. And the, the Paul's letter to the Romans, when he says, do not conform yourselves to this age, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, you know. But the point being that it's not, it's there, and anybody who enters into sacramental marriage, it's coming into a new state of life and into the mission of the church, you know, to do the will of God. So it's not just about, loving somebody. Again, we love everybody, but it's much
deeper.
Much deeper than that. So anyway, it was very, very nice. It was uplifting. It was very much so. And then just have that music there in the background. All right, we're already 17 minutes into the show, so we're going to take a break and come back and, well, just see where we go. I was going to talk about the 10 things Americans have suddenly stopped buying. Maybe we'll do that real quick.
Sure,
just make it a light show a little bit and then get
Monday.
Into some heavy stuff, maybe not. I just want to talk to say a little bit about what the Holy Father said, and maybe even we get a chance to go back to the readings yesterday because they're very beautiful readings. So from the gospel, from the Old Testament as well, and from the epistle. All right, everybody, we will be right back. What do I say here? I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
On Thursday, July 31st, Father Anthony talks with Juliana Tamarazzi, who will share with us the story of ISIS robbing Christians fleeing their edict in Mosul. Convert, leave, or die.
Or die.
And how you may be able to help them. Thursday, July 31st at noon on Winds of Change. The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
I'm Father Thomas Loya, and I'm inviting you to the best ever Prairie Fest.
Friday through Sunday, August 8th through the 10th. Friday night, it's Maggie Speaks.
Then Sunday evening at 7:30, Prairie Fest celebrates 50 years of the Beatles and the British invasion with American English.
It was 20 years ago today, such a ripper told the band to play.
Then on Sunday, August 10th at Prairie Fest, polka all day long. At 11 a.m., Polka Generations starts the day, followed by Eddie Carosa Jr. and the Boys from Illinois. Local favorite Harvest Moon plays on Saturday at 4. Prairie Fest with free admission, food, $10,000 raffle, children's games, and so much more. On the Prairie at Annunciation Parish, 14610 Wheel Cook Road, Homer Glen, Illinois. Details at ByzantineCatholic.com. Prairie Fest, Friday through Sunday, August 8th through the 10th.
Welcome back, everybody. Wow, that's a really happy...
Happy.
What do they
I'm
call that?
I'm going to try to get to Prairie Fest today.
A happy... They call it a happy, advertisement or whatever?
Yes. Very...
Makes you want to dance, you know?
Very joyful.
Dance the day away. Just trying to get into this week. I tell you, after a busy weekend, Okay, 10 things that Americans have suddenly stopped buying. This is kind of interesting. Just some very light for a Monday. What do you think? 10 things Americans have stopped buying, or they don't buy it as much. Cereal.
Really?
Yeah.
I still eat cereal.
Actually, I don't.
Well, cereal sales are down. Cereal sales are down 7%. And people are turning to yogurt and fast food in the morning. Mm-hmm. Less likely to eat breakfast at home at all. you know? So that's, how about that?
It's so expensive.
That's interesting.
And then people also want the breakfast packed more of a punch, so they're more protein-wise. So cereal buying is down.
Really? That's interesting.
Soda.
Get out.
There's a crash of soda, especially diet soda.
Don't start, Father.
That's why
he attacks people when
they drink soda.
Yeah,
diet soda.
if you talk to my brother again.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's right. I know that.
Let's just that.
I know
soda,
that
story. Diet soda. Okay.
We'll only talk to him when he comes on the show. We can have the two of you together here.
Good luck with that.
Gosh. Now the reason for that is that people are turning to energy drinks, flavored water, and other beverages.
Or just water.
Or just water.
Mm-hmm.
They want more organic, less sugar. So there's this war on soda.
Wow, that's interesting.
Okay, so
especially with the diabetes.
This is interesting too, and I think this is true. I don't remember the last time I did this, but gum.
Get out.
Gum, yeah. Get out. What do you mean, get out?
If I
get out, you take over.
No, then. I'm just saying.
Really?
How could you not have gum?
Well, gum chewing doesn't do us any favors. Makes us look like cows chewing our cud.
Cud.
For humans, that's not a good look. So that's what, you know, so gum is down. I guess people don't want.
No, that's a good thing. So that way they don't come in church chewing gum.
There you go.
That's a positive.
This is interesting, too. Guns. People are buying less guns.
No, I don't believe that.
No, there was a boom in recent years because of the anti-gun politicians, you know, had entered into office.
I don't think people are doing it legally anymore.
No, well, they say gun sales have fallen sharply because most people that wanted to buy guns have already bought guns. Mm-hmm. So they already have
their guns.
And also, there doesn't seem to be quite the fear that politicians are going to. Anti-gun, whatever.
Right. Okay.
You know, this is interesting now, by the way, if you believe this. Cupcakes are down.
No, really? Not cupcakes.
Cupcakes, yeah. Because, you know, there was a big trend in cupcakes. In fact, cupcake, they said there's, I don't know, this is the 65 store chain, so there must be 65, I guess they were selling cupcakes. Mm-hmm. But there was people have stopped buying gourmet cupcakes.
Oh, those are delicious.
You know, so there was a big, for the last several years, I guess, there were even stores opened, bakeries opened.
With
cupcakes, you know, specializing in cupcakes. So
wow, that's
those
interesting.
Are down.
Even like you're talking about like those fiber cupcakes and those kinds.
Well, you know, they're
all different kinds.
Just cupcakes, you know.
Just cupcakes in general.
So, but I think it's because there was a big trend. Everybody was eating cupcakes and then all of a sudden.
It's interesting. Not Yolanda Vargas and I just had one this morning.
Well, yeah, but you guys, well.
We got it from a friend.
There you go. Okay.
Homemade. Okay.
How about this? Chef Boyardee.
No way.
You grew up on Chef Boyardee.
I love Chef Boyardee.
86-year-old canned pasta.
Oh, no.
They're 86 years old, and there's been a significant decline in buying of Chef Boyardee. I don't remember the last time I had it, so.
I saw it in the store the other day.
Yeah. Golf gear.
Golf gear?
Golf gear.
I don't like
fewer
golf.
People are playing golf, especially millennials. Is this millennials?
Millennials.
Millennials.
Not playing golf, so golf.
Never was into
gear
golf.
Is down.
Miniature golf is something else.
This shouldn't surprise you, and you'll know why. Americans aren't buying razors.
Razors.
The sheet?
No, razors.
Just the...
For shaving.
They're not?
Because,
the electric.
Well, razors. The razor blades for shaving.
The razor blades.
Yeah, because...
You got the electric.
No, because beards are in. You notice everybody's got a beard.
Look at Tony.
Mine.
So that's a... It's a
getting
it's
rid
a,
of my beard.
Bread. Bread is way down.
See, I can see that. I've stopped eating bread.
The glutton.
56% of American shoppers are cutting back on bread, white bread.
Yeah, because of the gluten.
That's what I meant.
And then finally, convertibles.
No way. I wouldn't have a convertible.
Me neither. Especially not in the winter.
They're inconvenient.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right. So that's enough of our frivolity for this morning, right? Okay. I think we could talk about the 11 psychological risks, tricks for restaurants to make you spend less money, or more money, rather.
More money?
Yeah, we'll save that for another Monday.
Mm.
All right. Or 10 ways you can waste money at a grocery store.
Yeah, go when on an empty stomach. That would be
yeah,
number
one. Yeah, that's
one
of them. Anyway, let's look at. You don't want to hear any. So we'll get a little bit serious. This is a religious program. So, Pope Francis was. I want to make reference to this because I find this interesting. I always get a little bit bothered by this. You know, maybe you'll understand why. But he was speaking, of course, yesterday. This is during the Angelus, which every Sunday, you know, he has his Angelus message that people gather at St. Peter's Square at the noon hour. And people pray the Angelus in all the different languages. I believe it's prayed in Latin. And then I believe that's what it is. It's during the his audience on Wednesdays that it's spoken in different languages. He has somebody to interpret. You know, he's not the linguist that Pope Benedict was or Pope John Paul II, who could speak probably every language of the world, certainly a lot. But in any case, he was speaking from the, this is when he speaks from the window, the papal apartments. But I'm going to go through a few things. He certainly addressed the three crisis-stricken parts of the world, the Middle East, Iraq, and Ukraine. And they are in crisis, no doubt. And he urged the world to bear in mind the lessons of the past and to allow for dialogue and peaceful reasoning to prevail. I mean, we hear this over and over and over and over again, don't we, all through our lives whenever there's war. And he says, of course, that all is lost when there is war, but nothing is lost when there is peace. No more war. He's thinking about all the children whose hope and future are wrenched away from them. Dead children, wounded children, orphaned children, children who play with remnants of the war and are not able to smile. He says, please stop. I ask you this with all my heart. Not putting personal interest at the center, but the common good and respect for each individual. And again, he says, let us remember that all is lost when there is war, but nothing is lost when there is peace, so no more war. And then as he was into the address, he said, because he had also, this is actually not from his speaking from the window during the Angelus or after the Angelus, but this was when he spoke to the bishops of Caserta. This is southern Italy's, a southern Italian town, very mafiosa, you know, a lot of. The mobs are there. And he talked about unity among bishops, how important it is for the unity of the church. And he said some church historians say that in some of the first councils, fists would fly, but bishops eventually reached an agreement. He says it's bad news when bishops start gossiping about one another and form groups. It's not good because the unity of the church is broken, and we bishops should act as an example of church unity. And he said, and this is the interesting thing, and I just thought we could maybe talk. You guys can maybe tell me what you think. But and here he's speaking off the cuff, right? He says, you know, we are so often a church full of angry people. And I tell you, I kind of concur with that. But let's talk about that we are so often a church full of angry people. He says that this brings sadness and bitterness, and there's no joy. He says, when we meet a priest, and then as soon as I hear the word priest and I look at myself, who is constantly angry and tense, we think this man must drink vinegar for breakfast. And, you know, I do. I mean, I literally drink vinegar.
Really?
Yeah, I do. And
for health reasons.
People are going to take you seriously.
And eat pickled vegetables at lunch, and I don't do that, and have a long, tall lemonade at dinner time. But now what am I drinking right here?
Lemonade.
So just 2 weeks ago, I started drinking lemonade because I—
Because you're angry.
I don't know.
That's what makes you angry?
So, you know, so I read that, and, you know, then I got a little bit nervous. So I'm asking, you know, but in all seriousness, I do have to ask myself, you know, I've asked this before. And I'll tell you why. But anyway, he says, this kind of life is not good because it gives the image of an angry church. He says, joy is the right way to go. Feeling angry is normal. It's healthy to feel angry now and then, now and again. But living in a constant state of anger is not what the Lord wants, and it leads to sadness and division. So what we need to do is open up to people and say the right thing with patience. Okay, now let's just stay with that for a moment there, because I was thinking the other day that, because I do find, and I don't know that I project it, but I know I hold it back. I try to hold it back because I do get angry. I get angry at what I see happening in the world. And I was thinking about, you know, last week we talked a lot about the plight of the Christians in Mosul, in Iraq, in Syria. We can talk about the Christians in Nigeria and Indonesia, in the Philippines as well. This is something we don't hear much about, the stuff that's going on there, because the church is very, very, very strong in the Philippines. But you've got jihadists very actively involved there to disturb the peace. But the so this idea of joy. So anyway, thinking of that, the plight of the Christians, and the fact that so little is said. And again, I've read, and I don't want to bring it up again because I feel like I'm just going to be rehashing. And we have Julia coming on
on Thursday.
So I'm looking forward to that. So she can talk a little bit about, not a little bit, but she'll spend the hour speaking about the.
And she's lived it herself.
She's lived it, yeah. So that'll be very, very interesting. But I was thinking about the plight of the Christians there, and the, what did I say last week, that, you know, or the question, it was a question that was raised, why the silence from this end? And I was reading this morning, the president has never said anything about it. There's another article I read, too, it's about an absentee president, or has the president already checked out? And I'll tell you the truth, I was so tempted to bring, here I am talking about it, I said I wasn't going to, but I'm talking about it, but I wanted to, because it was such a powerful commentary on what he's doing, what he's not doing. And it's and basically, in many ways, we have a dysfunctional government, period, you know, and it's so hard to know who's speaking the truth. And I try to read things from different perspectives, you know, from a liberal perspective, from a conservative perspective. I try to read it from a Democratic, from a Republican perspective, a Libertarian perspective, and, you know, really, wherein lies the truth, you know? But the fact is, you know, the president is constantly fundraising, and so often fundraising among, you know, the people of Hollywood. And this is what angers me, and it's not just, you know, the president, but the... this fixation we have, this being under the dominion of Hollywood, very much, can you say, manipulated or controlled, or we call it a seduction, but we're just fixated on that. All of it. You mentioned it last Friday, I think. And yet we really, are we truly conscious, or do we really even care what's happening in the world and what's happening in our own country? What's happening in our own country? It's almost like we're kind of lulled into this lethargy when it comes to issues in the world, or just something as I was going to say as simple, but not as simple, but it's something as important as the defense of marriage and family, and yet it's just rather flippant, you know, that just it's all about, you know, love, you know, who's going to deprive anybody from loving anybody. Interesting, too, you know, I heard this morning, and I thought this was quite interesting, too, because we hear so often in Chicago about the murder rate, you know, there's killings, there's shootings every night. In fact, just here in the neighborhood this morning, there was just somewhere right over here, not too far from here, in Bucktown, I think on Marshfield, if I heard it right.
No, it's right here.
Was coming home, and he was off duty, I guess, and somebody was robbing a home, and he confronted the person, and they got into a battle or whatever, and there was a shootout, and the police was wounded, and the other guy was killed, you know, but going to the, back into the, let's say, gang-infested neighborhoods and the like, There was a very interesting commentary. A woman was speaking, a politician, I don't remember who it was, and she was African-American, so I thought it was interesting, you know, hearing this. It was good to hear this from an African-American, because she said, you know, these are, she said, we got a problem here in the community. And it's not just the African-American community, it's all over, but there seems to be a concentration, or it seems to be rather acute, the breakdown of the family, mm-hmm. the breakdown of marriage, and that you've got, as she said, she said, we've got children, because you hear often about these children who are killed, right? I think there was a child, a three-year-old mm-hmm. that was killed over the weekend mm-hmm. as well. And she said, but these are children raising children. These are children who don't want to be adults or having children. They're children having children, and they want to be in the in-group, which is where the power is, and that's in the with the gangbangers and all that. And so there's no parenting going on, or very little parenting. But she said in this case, the children are children. Mm-hmm. They're, even if they're, you know, in their early 20s or late 20s, or they haven't shaken the stuff of adolescence. And I truly believe that adolescence has been perpetuated in our society unto death, up to death. I think we're a nation that is perpetuating adolescent behavior, kind of adolescent rebellion. Again, it all goes back to this kind of radical individualism. But it's not even radical individualism, because people want to be part of something. And you know what's interesting, too, and I'm going to just make a comment about the crisis on the border, which is a humanitarian crisis. And again, I'll say, as I think people should agree, we should agree, you know, a nation has an obligation to protect its boundaries. And as I mentioned last week, the church has no boundaries, and so we minister to people, and we accommodate. I learn the language and all that, and I love the people that I serve, because they belong to me. They're brothers and sisters. They're sons and, I shouldn't say sons and daughters of God, but our brothers and sisters. And so we just take people as they are and minister to them, serve them as they are. But a nation has an obligation to safeguard and protect the border. And certainly as people that cross that border in crisis, many coming from horrific, horrible situations, escaping, fleeing from violence or poverty, extreme poverty and the like, you know, we minister to those people. You got Catholic Charities down there, and you've got other organizations down on the border as well. But what's this has become, in many ways, they're using this politically, and this is what's sad. It's sad for the people who are, especially for the women and the children. But you got these conflicting images, and what's often kept before the people for political purposes is that it's only children. So you get this sense that there's, you know, 90,000 or whatever children and women. But if you really take a look at the images, and I was reading some statistics the other day, but again, you know, wherein lies the truth? But the conflicting images, you'll see that you're also talking about a very, very, very high percentage of gangbangers and people that are somehow involved in the whole the drug cartels, and then of course the whole question of the coyotes, those who are bringing people over, the deceptions and the money. And I've dealt personally with people who have lost their loved ones, they've never found their loved ones, people who have been a coyote. How would you describe the coyote? As somebody who smuggles
people
across
and
the border.
Them and they don't. They say, well, the money that you're giving me is to protect you, that's not the case.
Not the case.
No.
And remember, we've dealt with, there's been a number of situations, but I'm thinking of the one family where for years they were trying to, they kept getting these, you know, we need this, you know, in order for you to get your son, we need X amount of dollars, yes. And then they'll send the belt, you know, or some part of some of his possessions, they'll send it to the family so the family knows that indeed they're dealing with him, yes. That they've got him, but he's never been found. And mm-hmm. it's almost, they've just accepted the fact that he's gone. He was mm-hmm. put to death. It's a very complex problem. What's disturbing is that it's being used for political purposes,
yeah.
You know. And the fact is that the impression that it's that there's this a certain purity and innocence about what's happening, and when in fact there is the dark side of all this as well. And anyway, I bring that up. Why I'm all over the place today. I guess you know, because I go back to what I was going to initially say, thinking of the plight of the Christians, thinking of the you know, even as I say, you know, we're in a parish, and so you don't know from one day to the next what's going to come through this door. But what comes so often through the doors of a parish is are people in crisis, people in crisis, and the extent to which there's crisis, where there's division in the family, where there's people dealing with addictions, where there's just a host of things, you know, and so often these are impossible situations to deal with. It's just like, you know, what can we do to bring some solace, to bring some consolation, to bring some healing, to get people back on the right path, to bring some wholeness, some healthiness into their lives. And if we don't, I mean, ultimately we have to bring people to the core of their life, their being, and that is a right relationship with God. As we heard yesterday in the second reading, that for those who love God, all things work for the good. Now, it doesn't. The implication isn't that you're going to have success, but it means that, you know, out of this difficult situation, if we put God first, and then certainly take care of the practical reality that we're suffering, but we put God there, we keep God there. At this, and it's as if, you know, we say so often, we see the cross, we cleave to the cross, but we have the capacity, the grace to see beyond the cross into the glory and the light of the resurrection, that death is not the end, that there is a light that will come into this darkness, there is a life that will come into this death, there is good that will come out of this evil, you know? And it means, you know, receiving people. And this is great. The great consolation we have in Christianity, which is unlike any other religion, and that is, you know, the cry of Jesus from the cross when he says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? As he had been betrayed and denied and abandoned, as his body had been mutilated, as he took sin to himself, and he's hanging on the cross in the dark of the dark, the darkness of darkness, and he cries out, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? But in the next breath, what does he say? But into your hands I commend my spirit. And if we can but, you know, so we don't deny the fact that people are, that cry comes from the depths, from the very depths of their being. You think of, again, those people in Iraq. But to be able to say, into your hands I commend my spirit, and then to suffer it and let the Lord lead us beyond this eventually into greater good. And ultimately, because we all know, and you just think back at the Malaysian airline, that where these people were, it was, you know, the missile was thrust upon that Malaysian airline, and there was 298 people that you know, instantly died. So, but the consolation, the consolation for those grieving families ultimately is that God can do only what God can do, and that is he brings life out of death. And so it is not the end. It is not the end. And that's where as we go through life, you know, we have to always peer into eternity. We have to always look into eternity, always see beyond the here and the now so that we make good use of the time that we have. Anyway, we can take a break. I've said a lot there. I guess I've thrown a lot of things out there. But it brings me back to this, when the Holy Father speaks about joy. And maybe you guys can answer this question when we come back. But what constitutes that joy when perhaps you're deeply afflicted? Now, there's the difference between a kind of bitter anger, but there is a proper anger, and he said there is proper anger, and I just say, I so over the weekend, reflecting on a lot of things, and even reading, you know, you what do? You look at the news coming from here and there and everywhere, and, you know, sometimes you just, I feel like Moses coming off the mountain and the anger, wanting to throw those, you know, just throw the tablets down and, you know, say, what gives? Mm-hmm. What gives? Why? Do we not have the humility to recognize not only our need for God, but our need for each other, and that we have a responsibility to each other, not just to do our own thing and to give nothing, no care for another. But anyway, we'll come back and let's talk a little bit about the joy. What constitutes Christian joy, you know, in the midst of the darkness and the pain and the anxiety and the affliction? All right, we'll be right back. I'm Father Anthony. You're listening to Listener Supported Winds of Change in AM 750 WNDZ.
Join us Friday, August 8th at noon when Father Anthony welcomes Frank Bonac to talk about a special devotion, Our Lady's Living Rosary, on Winds of Change.
Hello, I'm Takesha Mache-Kizart, and you are listening to the Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
You've heard us say that Winds of Change is listener-supported. That means you help us stay on the air with your dollars and your prayers. And we are asking for that help now. Please take a moment and go to our website, windsofchangeshow.com. That's windsofchangeshow.com. On the upper right-hand side of the page, there is a link. Support Winds of Change Show. Click on that link and donate securely with any major credit card. With your help, Winds of Change will continue to bring you the truth.
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for being with us on this Monday. So I guess we're starting to get a little bit heavy here. You know, we started out kind of light, but
that's good.
But what constitutes joy? You know, the Pope said that, you know, we're so often a church full of angry people, and I think there's I think he's saying something there, but there's a proper anger. We should be angry at what's happening. You know, sadness. There's cause for sadness, but what about the bitterness? I don't know what we want to be. I mean, let me, maybe you guys can talk here. What constitutes joy?
You know, more so than that, what comes to my mind, Father, is what you kind of said yesterday. I mean, I know people come in, but if I knew this as a child, I knew this even as an adult now, I know it now. But if we all knew that we come there not to be entertained, we come there not, you know, to look at each other, we come there.
You're talking to Mass.
Right, to Mass. To Mass. We come to give God everything, in a sense, give our lives. And although, yeah, the world is angry, people are angry, people are going through so many different things, but again, we're there for Him. We come to Him because He wants to see us. And then you said it too, you're not supposed to entertain. You know, you're not there to entertain. Our consolation is where? In God. You know, I mean, you're not there to make us feel good. You're not there to make us anything. I mean, you're there as a celebrant of the Mass. God works through you, but we are there for Him. So I think of, you know, when it's anger and things like that. I mean, if I knew to come to bring, and He knows. That's the beauty of God. He knows what we're going through. But it's taking that step and knowing why we're there. And I have nieces and nephews that are like, oh, we got to go to church. Why do we go to church? If you only knew, you know, if we only knew, we keep this in our minds, that's why we're there. And our joy is in Him.
Yeah, you know, I was, the why we go to church. And of course, we're in a society where we're spoiled on entertainment, mm-hmm. you know, right? Instantaneous entertainment.
Right.
We don't have space, silence. We're not perhaps as comfortable as perhaps people in the past where you have to, you learn to be alone, you learn to be in silence, you learn to, then I always go back to what, when I read that when through the Bible, when God wanted somebody to do something, where did he go? But he always went to the shepherds, right, because they were in essence disposed, because they had a time to think and to ponder, to reflect, to contemplate the things of life, because their lives weren't inundated with noise. Now we're talking about biblical times before they had television and telephones and cell phones and computer and all that kind of stuff. You know, I was reading yesterday. I mentioned at the mass that I read or heard yesterday that there was a study that was done that Americans, on the average, spend 11 hours in front of the television or the computer. You know, and then we have to ask ourselves, well, how much time do we spend before God, or how much time do we spend just being in relationship with others, and not through by way of cyberspace, but actually, you know, a flesh to flesh, you know, face to face communication, parents to their children, brothers to sisters, you know, how much time? What so much of our time is taken up by the technology that was supposed to make life easier, and thank God for the advances in technology, mm-hmm, and the access we have to so much information. So it was information overload, no doubt. But this idea that, you know, when it comes to worship, to mass, so this the anger, you know, the angry and bitter and all that. It's like, do we live our lives on a day to day basis like that, and do we want to come to mass to forget the problems? No, I think, you know, well, first of all. Gratitude, and this is, I think, for parents to teach their children. You know, and say, why do we have to go to mass? You know what? We're not going to be entertained, and I cannot, I will not. It would be the end of my priesthood if I had to be an entertainer, because that's not what I do. But to teach the children and to remind ourselves that, first of all, we come in gratitude, in gratitude that God has given us life, you know? So it's about Thanksgiving. It's about Thanksgiving. Eucharist means Thanksgiving. So we go to Mass in gratitude. Ah, you children, just think of what you're teaching that child. Your life is a gift from God. And the fact is that we're here today. Now, we don't know whether we'll be here tomorrow. And the fact is, you know, that we know that beyond this life, there is life if we remain with God. And so we come in gratitude for the gift of redemption, that Jesus, God so loved the world, he sent his Son, his only begotten Son, to make us sons and daughters. Jesus who laid down his life, you know, to the last drop of blood, that we would have life. And so we come to say thank you. We're not going to flee like the apostles or like the others. We're gonna go walk with him, you know, to the cross. And this is the holy sacrifice of the Mass, to unite ourselves. So first and foremost, it's gratitude. You got to teach gratitude. Always be conscious of the fact that your life is a gift. You have come from God. You are God's creation. God loved you into life. God created you in beauty and goodness. And yes, we live life in a fragile world, in a world that is characterized by unrest and violence and disorder and division and ego, selfishness, all this. You know, we become victims of the world we live in, and much of it we can't control. You know, you can't control the weather. There's a much you can't control. So we go in gratitude, but also we go because we have an obligation to unite our lives to the life of Christ, and that's what we do. And we offer. So we come. So we come what, to bring ourselves, Lord, here I am with my desire to grow. You know, to do. We're almost out of time, but I just want to, I meant to get back into this, but go back to the beautiful prayer of Solomon, you know. He had the dream, you know, and God came to him the dream. Now, Solomon was the successor of David. God had chosen him to be the new king. And he says, Lord, my God, he says, you know, I'm so young. He says, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to govern this people. It is so vast. He says, I don't know how to distinguish between right and wrong. He says, so I ask you for wisdom and a wisdom to know how to govern and how to distinguish between right and wrong. And God says, you know, I bless you because you could have asked, because God said, ask anything you want, I'll give it to you. He says, you could have asked for a long life. You could have asked for riches. You could have asked for the lives of your enemies, but you asked for wisdom, for an understanding heart. And so I give you even more. So God's not outdone in generosity. As so we have to teach, you know, our children, you know, we come, we bring ourselves, our broken lives, our desires, to do what? But to say, Lord, here I am. We come to do your will in gratitude. We've come from you. We go to you and you we live. We come, we offer you our lives. So is it just there to be consoled? No, we bring not only our personal sufferings, the sufferings of our family, but we bring the whole world. We don't go to Mass to escape, to run from this reality. No, we bring this reality. We bring all this. We bring the plight of the Christians in Iraq. We bring the plight of the Muslims who are suffering there. We bring the crisis in Israel, the Gaza Strip, the crisis in Ukraine. We bring the crisis on the border of the United States. We bring the crisis in the streets of our own city of Chicago. We bring anything and everything. And that should bring us to experience a certain sadness, because this is reality. There are people suffering, but at the same time, and that goes back to what the Pope said, you know, but they're not bitterness, because as Paul said, I think it was in his letter to the Romans, Jesse, for those who love God, all things work for the good. And so we bring the whole world that we know that we're not going to be defeated. We're not defeated. That good will prevail. Evil is present, and we are victims of the evil around us, but we have joy. You know, it goes back to the question, you know. So, yeah, there's an angry at the evil that people do to people. Do to people. There's a bitterness. There can be a bitterness, an anger, a sadness, certainly a sadness. But at a deeper level, at the deeper level, in the very core of our being, in the inner sanctum of the soul, indeed, there is a joy knowing that we're not defeated. And so we can look at the cross, and that's what we do when we go to Mass. We go to Calvary, but we don't stay there. We see beyond that into the glory and the light of the resurrection. And in fact, indeed, we receive Jesus, not the dead Jesus. In the Holy Eucharist, in Holy Communion, we receive Jesus, his body, his blood, his soul, his divinity. He gives himself. So we do come to receive, but it's only having given, you know. So it's, if we're there to be entertained, you got to, you know what? No, we come to give. We give ourselves. We come in gratitude. We take and we bring the whole world before the Lord, and then of course we receive. We receive His life. And what is it? But it's a food for the journey. That we know. Jesus, when he looked on the crowd, he took pity on them in the gospel, and he said to the apostles, he says, "Feed them so that they not collapse. They're like sheep without a shepherd." Feed them that they not collapse as they go on their way. So how can we feed them? We've only got 5 loaves of bread and there's 5,000 people. He says, feed them. And he performed the miracle, the multiplication of the loaves. And then he says, okay, you've eaten, you're satisfied, but you will die nonetheless. But I give you food to eat. With this food, you will not die. Eat my body, drink my blood, and you will have life in you. And so indeed, you know, we come to be fed that we not collapse into bitterness, into despair, a debilitating anger. And then we have the capacity, even in the name of suffering people all over the world, even if we're not suffering ourselves, but everybody suffers, okay. Suffers. But we're able to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? But into your hands I commend my spirit, because we know that that we're not defeated. Good will prevail. For those who love God, all things work for the good. Those conform to the likeness of Christ. So we become what we consume in the Eucharist. All right, everybody, thanks for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow, God willing. Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Ciao. Meaning